Welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio. I'm Dave Custy, your host for our International Arts Program. My guest today is Evan Moritz. Evan Moritz has been producing and directing theater in Baltimore since 2007, when he co-founded the Annex Theater. As the artistic director of the company, he has written, directed, and acted in over 20 productions, including Fantastic Planet, The Left Hand of Darkness, Macbeth, Taking Tiger Mountain by Strategy, and a forthcoming production of Mozart's Magic Flute. He's directed and acted for other companies in Baltimore, such as EMP Collective, the Copycat Theater, Everyman Theater, and Unsatisfied Factory. In 2010, Evan was named Baltimore City Paper's Best Director, and last year, the City Paper wrote that he is a director deeply concerned with the philosophy of theater. Currently, he is the co-leader of the Lamondo Project, in which several performance companies are renovating three historic buildings on Howard Street here in Baltimore into multi-venue experimental performance spaces. Welcome, Evan.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dave.
Sure thing. Tell us a little bit about yourself here.
Well, prior to founding the Annex Theater in 2007 with some friends, I went to school at James Madison University in Virginia. It was a school that was really concerned about, I would say, a more professional track for theater, but they also had this really bizarre, I don't even know if the school even still has this thing. They had an experimental theater there that was just a former turkey slaughtering building. It was a plant where they would slaughter turkeys, which is what they do in the western part of Virginia. Instead of turning it into a meth lab, I think they decided that they would let us produce plays there. So the students were able to propose their budgets and produce plays on their own. And it was pretty formative. I got to direct a couple large-scale epic shows that I don't think an undergraduate typically gets to direct, especially when they're like a sophomore. I directed Angels in America and Bertolt Brecht's The Caucasian Chalk Circle.
Very good.
And going into my junior and senior years at college, I was increasingly concerned with site-specific work. I was interested, along with several other people who are in the program, about what would it be like for a theater company to adopt the model that a touring band has, a music ensemble had. What would tours look like? What would be the alternative spaces we would tour around the country into? How do we deal with marketing? How do we deal with what it means to live in a city versus tour? Those are some of the formative questions that we had when we first were envisioning a theater company. I moved up with a couple people I went to school with, including our current managing director, Rick Garretts. And we moved to Baltimore. It had a lot to do with the fact that I grew up in Harrisburg. A lot of my friends who are artists, if they didn't go to Philly or New York, most of them really ended up settling in Baltimore because Harrisburg, for as much abandonment and poverty as there was in Baltimore, Harrisburg had something of a special level of abandonment. There seemed to be abandonment with not really the same spark that there is in the people who live in Baltimore City. There seemed to be a more of a artistically creative fighter spirit in the people that lived here. I think drawn a lot of people from where I was from to come down to the city. So we moved up here. I moved up here at the recommendation of a friend who rented a warehouse space here and was in a band. And quickly after, some of my other friends from school moved up as well, and we rented a warehouse space on Green Mountain, East Oliver Street, the annex to the Copycat. And we lived in the space, we did shows there, and we gained some other allies from Baltimore City. And quickly the impulse from where we were in Virginia became more about the people we were working with in Baltimore. And I think that, right now it's the main people working in the company who had been with the company since it was in Virginia are just me and Rick, our managing director. Mm-hmm. And when we moved up here, we named our company after the building, really, because we couldn't think of a better name. We had a few thoughts about how to name it, how to brand it, the direction to go, the initial impulses. But all of it boiled down to, let's do shows right now as soon as we can, market them as fast as we can. I think everybody got from, a month or two of thinking, everyone got very impatient to start producing work. And when we did, we just didn't stop. And that's pretty much the whole story of it. We spent 3 years in the Annex building. I think our first season had 10 plays in it, and it was just one right after another. We did eventually start touring around the country and performing in alternative spaces, as was our original plan. And when we left the Annex, because, I think fundamentally it is kind of hard to continue living in a space where they made concrete anchors. After a while, there's something about living in a brutalist cement building is not... Yeah, not
takes the wear and tear on.
Yeah, and we certainly couldn't afford to keep it going as just a theater. We had briefly moved to the Bromo Arts District, which is... We lived in the H&H building, which is an artist warehouse space there. And that was before it was the Bromo Arts District. We produced slightly less in the H&H, but... In that period of time, I think we kind of galvanized what the company really was, what we wanted to do. And we knew we wanted to actually be in a smaller space than we had been before in the Annex building and in the H&H. We wanted to operate out of a smaller space because we liked something about the intimacy and the density of the audience. So we collaborated with the Station North, with Station North Arts and Entertainment District. They were... putting in some offices in a former New York Fried Chicken restaurant on North and Charles Street.
Mm-hmm. So what year are we talking about?
This year, at this point, I've just jumped from 2007 to 2012-13 was the year we were working on the New York Fried Chicken restaurant. Mm-hmm. And in May of 2013, we got all the permits, finished the, sort of our preliminary construction. It's still, we rent it from the city for $1 a month at this point because it's eventually going to be turned into the Maryland Film Festival building. So okay. They just want to keep some activity going in there for the next year or two. And we began in 2013 with a production of Macbeth, and that opened the space. And we've been operating out of the New York Fried Chicken restaurant. We currently have a show going up right now, in fact.
We're recording this on February the 5th, 2015.
Yeah. So currently we have Mary Hartman, which is in its last weekend right now. It's an adaptation of the soap opera parody from the 70s starring Louise Lasser, which has been, we've had a lot of great success, I think, being in a small space in a highly trafficked area at this point. But one thing that...
Were you able to bring your audience from over in Greenmount to the Colonel?
Yeah. It was... It wasn't very far. It's just a hop, skip, and a jump away.
No, but I mean your audience base.
Yeah.
Bringing them over there.
Yeah, it wasn't...
I don't mean physically take them over.
I don't think it was a very large conceptual leap. Although there were things I definitely missed about living in the Greenmount West area. We felt like we had known living there and performing there. We felt like we really knew our neighbors. Mm-hmm. Quite well. We did some shows with kids that lived in Greenmount West. Some of those kids have since moved out into different neighborhoods. I see them from time to time. But since we don't live there, we feel like we got something going there a little bit and lost it a little. So it's been...
But you had to make those decisions.
They're tough decisions you have to make in sometimes you have to move for just really practical reasons. Right. And
but it's not like you moved to California or anything like that. You're just, like you say, hop, skip, jump.
Yeah. And I think that almost in those instances, a lot of the kids we worked with, I think that they were great and really fun, but mostly we were giving them something to do in the summer that would be fun for them to do.
Sure.
I think only the couple of kids whom I think we really struck a chord with in terms of theatrical production stuck with it, and we're still close with them. So starting up
that's
a program
always what it makes it worthwhile with me. I did some projects when I lived in Northern Ireland, arts projects, and there's always like one or two or sometimes more sparks in the group. You say, oh, look at that,
yeah.
he or she, they, you know, they're going someplace. They really get it, and they're the ones, too, hopefully, that mm-hmm. stay with it, you know, and then develop it and it evolves for them.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, as we've been, as we had moved back into Station North, and now as we're talking about the Lomondo project, big consideration has been, like, what have we learned have been the successes and the failures of our company? And a big success for me personally had been there was a period of time where I was teaching an after-school theater program through the Child First program. I was teaching it in Brooklyn, Maryland, in South Baltimore, mm-hmm. and it was at Baybrook Elementary Middle School. And it was I had a hard time teaching. I don't think I was built for...
teacher
for to be a teacher, and so I could, you know, I discovered I could teach maybe five people at a time tops, but when I had a classroom of 30 kids, I didn't have the skill set for that. But I met one student who approached me with a trilogy of plays he'd written. He was 14 years old. He had been writing them since he was 12, and
wonderful.
He had never seen a play before, which I thought was curious.
And he's written plays.
He's written plays, yeah. So I was really intrigued by it. I mean, it was, as an experimental deviser of work, I was really intrigued by how, by what the content of the plays would be. And I really loved them. We ended up staging the first play, which was called The Dark World's Destruction. This student, his name is Derek Carr. We ended up staging The Dark World's Destruction, and it paralleled... It was a space sci-fi play, but it paralleled his personal journey through the foster system in Baltimore
mm-hmm.
In a very loose way. I think there were some correlations, like him. I know in his life he rejoined with his biological father
mm-hmm.
When he was about 10 or so, and met up with all of his brothers who had been in different places through. I think different relatives and through a foster program temporarily. But in the play, the superhero Derek, who's like this really good guy, meets up with his father, who's a sensei who can train him even further. And there's like all these really subtle parallels there that I thought was really great, how he had the intuition to infuse his personal life into something that was so far outside of his, you know, complete fantasy, really. So that far outside of his experience, so that it gave it this feeling that it was really organically it was a real organic approach to science fiction fantasy.
And amazing at 12 years mm-hmm. old, 13
yeah,
years old.
It was a fantastic insight to have into writing. So yeah, we produced the play. It was really fun. We had a great time producing it, and I've stayed in touch with him, and he's continued to write. Now he's in CCBC. Studying theater, which is great.
Wonderful.
I think it, you know, I would count that as a major success story. And we still do staged readings of Derek's plays. And we are talking about maybe producing another show in the next couple seasons. But yeah, so these are the sort of success
stories. It's a tough going when you're in the arts and in the nonprofit world. But these little bits and pieces of things, you say to yourself, you know, I work my ass off and stuff. But this is what makes it worthwhile,
right, sure. That you feel like you connect with someone beyond the traditional boundaries of where you're at and what you're
doing. You've had an effect on people.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
The thing too.
Mm-hmm. And there are definitely moments where, you know, you can get a standing ovation in a house or something like that, but oftentimes the connection that you have with a single person is that runs really deep can be more meaningful. So,
and it runs really deep in you, because mm-hmm. I can remember times where I almost shudder when I, you know, when I'm talking to the person saying, God, this is, you know, something mm-hmm. just so amazing and just so wonderful that it took what I said and took it a step, he took it, or she took it a step further,
right,
you know, and incorporated it into themselves.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for all these reasons, all these experiences, I think learned that we share a common problem with several other theater companies, and that's that we've kind of been shuffling around to different temporary spaces for many years now, and we came together with a common goal of finding sustainable long-term spaces for theater companies, something that's a little bit bigger, so that we could, but that maintains the risk that is necessary for theater new and experimental theater to be able to operate in. We wanted something that had the size capacity and probably the magnetic name recognition and ideally the sustainability of ownership to allow our companies to develop into mid-size groups so we could have some more funding to, you know, pay a little more for stipends for actors, find some full-time staffing, be able to operate an outreach and an educational program and a community development program that affects people in the way I felt like we had an impact on Derek at one point. So we came together, these six theater companies originally, and we decided that what we really wanted was, we felt Howard Street was a great location. There's a lot of abandoned buildings there. It was a former theater district at one point, and it was close to downtown. We were really in what we felt would be a place where we could make a significant impact. And I think that for what all of our theater companies share, what we all do is we care most about the kind of qualitative impact that we can make in an area. Within that comes, you know, all sort of tied within that is, okay, well, how do you sustain it and make that? Yeah.
So. But also, the city wants to do something with that area.
Right.
So having you in there as kind of the, almost like a pilot program in terms of,
right,
you know, what's going to happen there, and I'm sure they're very willing to help in which way they can. But like you said, the main thing, I think, in terms of what you need is the sustainability thing. It's
right.
Great to be getting capital money and all, but you need operating costs for, I mean, in my experience, it's like 2 years at least in the places
right.
that I've dealt with that opened up theater centers and arts places like that is about 2 years without
yeah.
earning a penny to be able to have that kind of money, that kind of capital in
right.
terms of operation costs when you set it up. And I'm sure, you know, I'm sure you did that in terms of with your proposal. And
yeah, we've developed a 10-year operating pro forma for a part of our submission, but we also have been tweaking that and tweaking that and tweaking that to make sure that it reflects our most updated visions of the space, how we're going to generate income that can be earned income while minimizing our amount of contributed operational income. And I think that one thing we've been doing for our research for these spaces is we've been looking at a lot of other – we've been doing site visits to experimental theaters in New York City and Providence, in particular AS220 in Providence, which is some ways is like the philosopher's stone of
the art paradigm
spaces.
For
yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. It really solves a lot of the questions and issues people have with how do you have an artist-run arts organization that owns space. But we also toured La Mama and in New York City and also in New York, Chocolate Factory, Ars Nova, Invisible Dog, and Silent Barn. And something that Chocolate Factory really impressed upon us is that we can come up with a lot of strategies for earned income, and it's important that we do, but without thinking about the fact that contributed income is going to mean so much to the space. If we operate under that model of like, oh, we're never going to need contributed income, we're going to completely earn our keep on these spaces, we're going to rent them out at market rate. Yeah, I mean, it's just they impressed upon us that that affects is your ability to pay people, the amount you spend on that space, your ability to subsidize studio rents to get sometimes better artists in there.
Sure.
And when it becomes about how do we find the person who can pay what we're asking versus how do we find the best person for it? Then that is something that affects our operations too. So, the lesson from Chocolate Factory, which is an experimental venue, which as of the last couple of years, they've been around for about 10, I think. As of the last couple of years, they've been producing shows that have been winning multiple Obie Awards, Off-Broadway Awards, and have really shown that the model that they're working on, where you really pay people decent amount of money to perform, really pays off in terms of quality, in terms of notoriety, and eventually in terms of who comes and contributes to your
right.
organization. So, you know, these are from these site visits and these little bits of research we've been doing. These are huge lessons. We want to maximize our contributed income as much as we can, but recognize that for every dollar that we get that's contributed to the building, we're able to make our programming and our space that much more accessible, radical, and forward-thinking as we possibly can.
But you can find contributors or whether it is, I don't know, I'm not going to say banks or whatever like that, but people with the pockets that actually see your vision too, not just want to say, oh, this area is going to be developed, we're going to help you with that, but actually say, okay, here's the money.
Yeah.
Here's almost not a, like a blank check, but here's something enough that you do what you want to do with this one space and do with this, maybe name it after us or whatever like that, the space, but, you know, because that's worked in the past. You do have to have something like that, and you do have to have occasionally high-profile things to make avant-garde or whatever you like to call it work, too. You're going to have the stuff that the masses like
also. Well, yeah, and the going down the route of foundations and grants is it's necessary. You have to do it. But, of course, the foundations and the grants want to see that you're developing, and I think they're right in this regard, that you're developing a broad base of contribution of income streams so that if their grant went away after a couple years and they wanted to focus on something different, a different new arts organization, that your organization wouldn't crumble because they removed that grant. Mm-hmm. They want to be able to see that you have a broad enough and diverse enough streams of revenue so that your project is sustainable.
And that you're going to be around for a while.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that's really, it's a lot like building a building is building your operational support. It's like you have to create a solid foundation of many contributors and many streams of earned income, ticket sales, upper floor rentals, all sorts of things that can keep that building alive and afloat and keep it mission driven, which I think is really important.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And
like you said, to actually pay the artists a living wage.
That would be important, too. I think that would be fantastic. The thing about it is, like, one thing that has been impressed upon us from all these experimental venues has been that every there's no space that is developed without some compromise made. There's been some huge compromise. No matter where you come from, or there's something floating over it.
I mean, it's not a perfect world.
Well, you have to certainly be flexible. And I think, you know, when we visited Chocolate Factory, for instance, the two people that ran Chocolate Factory are like, effectively, we stopped making art. We just raised money to pay the other artists. When we visited Ars Nova in Manhattan, they have a giant, beautiful new space in Manhattan, but they're an experimental company. They're in Hell's Kitchen. It's Midtown. Mm-hmm. It's pretty surprising that they are even there.
Yeah, because it's been developed in the last years. I mean, it was there 30 years ago, and it was Hell's Kitchen. But now, I mean, there's a lot of venues and all sorts of stuff.
And so, you know, when we talk to them, they have a major single donor who has to eventually step down their donation amount. Mm. So they have a, I don't know, $1.5 million donation coming in every year that's stepping down by $100,000 each year. So you can imagine each year they're like having to scramble for a new source of $100,000. So there's a compromise right there too. Having too much funding from one source makes you vulnerable. And so there are these lessons we're learning from that. And we're trying to suss out just what will our compromise be, and how will we mitigate it and make it a thing that can serve us rather than harm us.
Well, one of the things... Yeah. reasons I'm here is to be international.
And right.
I think that is important to, as they used to say, to act locally and think globally. Mm-hmm. Because in my experience in Europe, there is a lot of theater companies that are on the type of range that you are, in the avant-garde and
right.
the new experimental work, site-specific, and all, and that I hope to open up a communication with them. An ongoing possible toward collaboration, ongoing communication in terms of forums, and to bring in Baltimore in the forefront. Because to be truthful, I mean, not too many people know about Baltimore over there. And then what they've heard is the wire and collapsing streets. And there is a marketable, too, base of theater companies like you.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I want to do visual arts, too, and search for that, too.
Yeah, but absolutely.
Because it can happen in terms of what I want to talk to you about afterward, in terms that there are companies around that are incorporating technology. So there are places where plays are happening simultaneously in the place, but also across the world because of technology. Mm-hmm. And it's that kind of theater where it's decided by the audience too, and there's all sorts of different streams of that. But my whole point of bringing that up is that can be another financial stream too.
Yeah,
talking to international companies that might want to move here, even, and we might see, oh, Baltimore does this, and let's see what else Baltimore does. I mean, there could there could be a lot of incorporation in terms of Baltimore Development Corporation working with you guys and doing all that kind of stuff, and tourism, too.
Yeah, and likewise, we have a strong tech community here, too. So if the overlap were stronger between the arts and the tech community, I think we could, you know, really do something with that. But as I'm thinking about it, there are two things that come to mind when I start thinking about what to do about making putting Baltimore on the world map versus kind of taking care of our own. Mm-hmm. The mirror we have to stare into when we're looking at this project, I think that we can't answer a lot of other questions until we really answer this, is we need to be thinking as an arts community, especially an experimental arts community, about how we can be more racially diverse, how we can break down some of the boundaries of some of the ageist boundaries that occur in our companies. A lot of us are in our 20s and 30s and are white people. And, you know, certainly isn't the case of all the groups, I think, but there are a number of transplants as well. So we want to figure out, like, I don't think it's like a Rubik's Cube. I think it's just as much as going and talking and saying, hey, get involved with us, do something with us. We do want to figure out quite, you know, how this space and these performance venues and the upper floors can serve a more diverse base of people in the city. And I think that's a question that we all have to ask ourselves as an arts community. And in fact, last weekend, there was a event held at 2640, the Art Apartheid event, in which there's a large discussion about, and a lengthy discussion, in fact, great lengthy discussion about what to do about race and diversity and the issues that come up in the Baltimore arts community. And I think a lot of headway seem to be made from that. And I think they're going to have several of these events. But, you know, I think that when we look at how to engage in the international community, we need to be, it's almost like what we want to be able to present, how we want to present ourselves and the face we want to show the international community. We want to be able to show a diverse face, and we want to be able to show in terms of the quality and the aesthetic of the work, something very different than we would see in, say, a place like Europe. We want to have our own stamp, our own avant-garde, our own identity that presents Baltimore in a way that is not in any way, shape, or form sort of copying off the recent rise in avant-garde theater, for instance, in Eastern Europe.
Oh, no, of course not. I actually wasn't saying that. I was just saying that to bring in, you know, that's what has to happen, that mm-hmm. Baltimore has to have their own identity.
Right.
You know, and that can happen within. They don't have to be mutually exclusive, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
But it hit me when you were talking, when you were at Green Mountain, and you're talking about the neighborhood kids mm-hmm. in there. I was at a United Nations meeting about a couple months ago, and they were asking about how to incorporate, to make communities more whole, really. And I mm-hmm. thought, well, there's one of the things is that community centers need to be opened.
Yeah.
Because community centers can be the hub in terms of, on a simple level, for mm-hmm. kids to do something, like you were saying there.
Yeah.
But also that there could be a hub for business startups, for businesses mm-hmm. that stay in the community. And then when you engage people like that, you make the community proud, and that negates crime. And that really, I mean, that's been proven statistically.
Right. Yeah.
Arts can do that.
Yeah, and I think we have a responsive, you know, I think since the community centers, a lot of the rec centers in our communities in the city had been closed several years ago, which I think was a big blow to Baltimore. I think there's a responsibility as an arts community, as community members, not just as artists, to find ways to help fill that void and help advocate in the future for city funds to go toward rec centers once again. But I think that what you're saying is really strong, because I think that there's a need for these community centers to go beyond child recreation. I think that if they're really centers that break down a lot of age barriers with people.
Right. I mean, it could be a one-stop shop for a whole lot of stuff. You know, it could be seniors. Mm-hmm. It could be, you know, getting to know people, basically. And the thing is that it can be open all the time. And we have all these enterprise zones all mm-hmm. around here. And what I hear, which I hope I'm wrong, is that sometimes they have to give the money back because they don't have anything to do with it. I mean, this should be a basic foundation. At least that's what I think. I mean, it just seems to be a no-brainer to me. And the arts would be an integral part of this.
Yeah. And I think the unfortunate thing about these things that seem like no-brainers is that they're no-brainers if we had a society that functioned a little more simply than we do. We have a society that's very laden in bureaucracy and regulations, maybe for a good reason, probably not, is my hunch. But we have a very complex society that is serving many masters. And I think that as we start thinking about how we live in a country where, probably a world really, where doing something like cutting funding for rec centers and having them closed down is a lot easier than finding money for rec centers and opening them up. I mean, it's got to be 100 times easier to cut the funding and close them down. So when we lose something like that, what we do is we make it 100 times more difficult for us in the community, while on the one hand, we might solve a budget issue.
Right, you because know, it's an easy way out. It's a non-thinking way out, really.
Right. So
let's take the low part of the totem pole and just chop it up.
Yeah, and I recognize that if you're in city government, it might be very hard to find all the ways to balance these budgets and that you have to make difficult sacrifices because of the complex world we live in. But
you're a very good diplomat. You're going to go far.
Right. Well,
but no, I understand what you're saying about that.
Too much of a diplomat.
Well, let's get back to Le Monde. You were talking about the space itself in terms of theatrical space, but you're going to have visual arts there, and you're going to have.
I imagine there will be some. Yeah. As we're starting
to look at, you're asking people what they want.
Yeah, right. And I think that we did get some. We didn't at the charrette that we had last Saturday in the current gallery. Yes, a good So elegant. At the charrette that we had at the current gallery, in which we met about the design possibilities for this for our new building with community members, we didn't actually have a whole lot of people. Maybe I remember one comment talking about non-performance related arts in the space. It was from a woman named Janae who talked about us. What's the possibility of having a film component? And the answer was that as we were figuring out the second and third floors of these buildings, you know, the first floor of the Le Monde buildings will have three performance venues in it. And that's kind of that's a bit of the crowning jewel and the thrust of the vision for it. I think performance venues are really key. And if we can, you know, make them accessible to as much of the experimental performance community as possible, we can incubate as many experimental companies as possible.
Right.
And again, that ties into the non-ageist, diverse art scene that we'd like to, and non-ageist, diverse, and crazily, awesomely avant-garde art scene that I think we really would love to see in this city.
And that, too, what we were just talking about, too, the community, is that I deal with the Baltimore Curriculum Project and some programs that they do, and they have programs in their schools that would probably fit into these spaces pretty
well. Yeah, for sure. Would be great to have that there. Yeah, it would be excellent. I didn't even think of that, to reach out to the Baltimore Curriculum Project.
It'll cost you $20, please.
Cool. Thanks for
so you have the plan, the floor plan, a basic floor plan.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to do three venues on the ground floor. Talk about the rest of it.
Yeah, and the upper floors, it seems like the tide is shifting quite a bit toward having studio spaces. And I think that we're going to be thinking about studio spaces a little more critically. It wouldn't necessarily only be for visual artists, although they certainly wouldn't be excluded from having studio space.
But a rehearsal space, mainly.
But also rehearsal. Yeah. I think that we're looking at studios that serve a variety of functions, including, rehearsal space, dance studio space, because that's a huge need in our dance community here, is studio space. We're looking at what's the possibility of a soundproof practice space for musicians or recording studio. What's the, as Janae at the charrette brought up, what can we do for film and recorded media but I think that the common thread behind all this is how can our space be incubating experimental and avant-garde artists to become the face of what the Baltimore art scene is. That's an ever-changing, ever-morphing world of of you know, city that can continue to challenge world arts in terms of its aesthetics and makeup. Yeah,
and it's also about the artists themselves,
right?
You know, getting them out there.
And
because
so
there's a lot of them here, you know, that just not in seclusion, but you know, we would never hear about.
Yeah, just getting getting them acclimated to the larger art community. Would be a huge thing. And at the same time, I think that if we, with Lomondo, can really make a strong arts community there and be an example, I hope, along with many other organizations, of what good arts community and experimental incubation looks like.
Yeah, good practice.
If we can figure out that good practice, and it's tough. It's not going to be easy, but they're difficult questions worth tackling head on through active means. And if we can do that, I think, you know, as you said, it's not mutually exclusive from working in the world theater.
Well, you make your own identity, you talk to people around the world, and like I was saying, it's a business plan. You see what they've done.
Yeah,
that's worked
for
too.
Sure.
You know, you said about New York venues and theaters and such, but there's a lot out there that are doing some really great work.
Yeah.
Besides the fact that they are sustained, too. You know, and how do they do that? It's a different type of ball game over there because I think not to alienate anybody here, but I think that they see the arts as a bit more important than we do here in the States.
Well, certainly governmentally, I think they do, and I think that there's a lot more governmental funding for arts, and because it is nationally funded, it distributes, I think, a little bit more evenly across the artistic fields than it does here. Because we don't federally fund a lot of our arts in the United States, I think we really and we rely on oftentimes localized foundations, and you know, they're who are great. I think localized foundations are fantastic, but they don't have the kind of resources that, say, a large federal endowment would.
Well, that's what it is. It's just the opposite here. It's more private foundations and not public, and over there it's more public.
Yeah,
you know, and part of the budget every year
because the chunk of what they their chunk of change is a lot smaller. I think that they're more risk averse, I think, than they would be if they were a federal agency with a lot more funding.
Good point. Yeah. I'm going to have this as a continuous updates and program.
Yeah.
So if you'd like to come back forever, that would be terrific. So what I want to do right now is, in terms of concluding, is to talk about where you are right now and what you want to be in 3 months to a year, let's say.
Oh, great. Yeah. You know, right now I'm working on Mozart's Magic Flute. I'm excited to work on opera. It's sort of like a second love of mine from straight theater. I really tend to like new works and classics, and opera has this – I don't even know why I like opera. It's something that – you know, probably annoyed my parents when I was growing up that I'd listen to it, but
really, that's just the opposite of
they wanted me to listen to rock and roll. I listened to opera instead for some reason, and among lots of other music, but I'm really excited to work on that project in the near term. We're going to present that at our space on 1 West North Avenue.
This is Annex Theater.
Mm-hmm. You know, and of course, I'm excited for the Lomondo project, which is, you know, occupying a lot of my brain space right now. But, like, a big contingent of where I would like to go personally as an artist and what I'd like to see. When you brought up this international program to me, it was very exciting for me because the first things I thought about were, I sent you an email, the groups, the theaters who have in the past caused people to go over what seemed like uncrossable boundaries. For instance, Jerzy Grotowski's Polish Laboratory Theater in the 60s brought many people from Western Europe and the United States over to see the productions and even train there in the Soviet Union. It's fascinating that people would cross the Iron Curtain into Eastern Europe because this theater, which is usually structured for an audience of 20 or 30, is that much of a magnet. The theater work is that qualitatively impactful. I think it's a very important lesson to learn. And I also have been very interested in the theater community in Tehran as of late. The scholarly articles and some of the magazine articles and things like that the glimpses that it presents are really intriguing. I have been, you know, there are a lot of site-specific things. I was reading about a production in which all the audience were in cars with the actors driving, and they're all in a parking garage, and the cars would almost zip right past each other. Mm-hmm. And there'd be these scenes that would take place in cars. If an audience member tried to get out, they'd have actors who portray the police, like, subduing them and arresting the audience.
So that's great.
They weren't able to get out of the cars. And then the last scene had microphones all around it, and all the cars gathered in a circle, and their headlights shone in the center so that the audience would listen to on the radio the actors performing the last scene in the middle of all these cars. Mm-hmm. In this parking garage. Like, really intriguing.
That's the kind of stuff the Baltimore's do, that kind of inventive stuff. You know, that's the thing that really gets the attention to.
Right, and that's the sort of thing that, you know, translates way far beyond. I mean, it seems like pretty audacious. They're talking about it's a play about a totalitarian government. And the interesting thing about a lot of these articles is they talk about how subtly these theater companies tread the line between what they're allowed to talk about in Tehran and what they're not, and how they can talk about their government and talk politically in terms of their theater. And the fact that they're doing it in that subtle of a way, as Grotowski's Polish Laboratory Theater did in the 60s, talked on such a thin line about the government, they have really attracted a lot of attention to an area that we typically don't think we would go to see theater.
Right.
So Tehran has really been occupying a lot of my brain about how to talk about international theater what to be thinking about in terms of what's exciting me about it.
So let's say in say 5 years, where do you see yourself and Le Mondo? And you think you're still be in Baltimore?
Oh, yeah. I think that even if I do some work in another area, that would only be temporary and I'd be coming back to Baltimore. I would see that Le Mondo having been completely constructed and finished in 5 years, and then that is to say all of the phases, because we're phasing in the building floor by floor, basically, all the phases would be complete. We would be installing a residency program, I would hope, that could, you know, be a hybrid of local resident artists and international resident artists. I would like to be a participant in that community at Le Mondo. You know, I would like to see our company grow as a result of operating out of this space, and I'd like to see other companies grow. Everyone really rises with the tide when we all work together. And I would like to see this theater community and the many theaters involved being really important on an international scale, and being able to move freely and tour. I mean, tour in a lot of the same mentality that we began our company touring, in touring to these other countries too, and to other places that would be excited and intrigued by Baltimore theater and be thinking about this city's identity of performing arts.
It would be incredible if we got to a point where people anywhere thought of Baltimore that way.
Yeah.
Just one of the first things they thought about is the artist and what happens here, is created here.
I think that it's not that it isn't happening now. I certainly think it is happening in other countries, but it's happening in the underground arts communities, typically.
Underground.
Yeah. The first people to hear about in the other countries. So,
But that's what I mean. I mean, just, you know, Joe Public to come out and say, hey, let go over there, the arts community and such.
And if we're going to do that internationally, we need to be able to do that locally as well.
Is there anything else you'd like to add in terms of conclusion here?
I don't necessarily think so. I think that...
We've given people a lot to think about.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes all I do is think about this building project, and I...
It gets that way.
Yeah.
I mean, but, you know...
It's part of those compromises and sacrifices.
Do it while you're your age, because at my age, you remember one thing and then forget five things forever. So give us some contact info.
Okay. You can contact me. My name's Evan Moritz. You can contact me at evan@baltimoreannextheater.org. And that is theater spelled TheaterTer. And you can contribute to our company and to the Le Mondo project all in one PayPal button at this moment, which would be on our website, baltimoreannextheater.org. And check out in the near future, because we will be having a crowdsourced funding campaign coming up through the CrowdRise program.
Great. Very good. Well, I want to thank you, Evan, for being here.
All right.
And like I say, come back and keep us updated when even if you don't come back soon, but I hope you do.
Yeah.
Just keep us updated. We'll put it out there so we can connect with people and around the world and tell them what you'll be doing. I've been talking to Evan Moritz. He's a producer, a director, and he directs theater here in Baltimore, and a co-founder of the Annex Theater. He is also the co-leader of the Lamondo Project. Several performance companies are renovating three historic buildings on Howard Street here in Baltimore into multi-venue experimental performance spaces. Thank you for being here on Baltimore Internet Radio's International Arts.
Thanks for having me.